Welcome to Geek Nerd Tech on Black Hollywood Live. Today, Donald Trump is still our president. Tribe Called Quest has a new album, and Facebook has some explaining to do, maybe. Let's go.
You are tuned in to Black Hollywood Live's Geek Nerd Tech.
Yes, the bright, shining light of last week that helped us. Welcome to Geek Nerd Tech, the show we break down tech news and nerd culture from a black and brown geek perspective.
Yeah.
I'm Joe Braswell, joined as always by Mr. Keely Shine.
Yes, sir.
How you doing?
I'm good, man. I'm well, man. I love this new Tribe album. It's pretty. Got some good slappers on there, man. It's just good to have, you know, we talked about this when De La Soul dropped their album. It's good to have two legacy, you know, early 90s hip hop groups come out with albums this year.
Yeah.
And this is a dope run.
The highlights, you know, the highlights of 2016 are those two albums. But this album is, no disrespect to the De La album, this album is like, for me, it's way up there in terms of everything. Not only just the timing and sort of the beginning of post Trump art, you know, if you will, the timing, even though it was, you know, it seemed to come right on time, but just it's just a great album. It's a really, really good stuff, and actually like makes me. I've been reading about this too, and people brought this point up, but. It's really it's also very much a Tribe album. It's very much a Q-Tip album as well. And you forget, Q-Tip's kind of a genius, you know, in terms of what production wise, lyrically wise, sonically, you know, his contributions to the Kanye's Dark Fantasy albums in general, like how he, what he does sonically and how he puts together stuff and how he plays, samples and instruments and puts things together are very unique. I mean, Shaheed Muhammad's obviously the same, but, like, you know, I don't know, man. I'm really, really, I miss this.
Yeah, Q-Tip is definitely a polymath in the sense that, I mean, and he's always been that way. DJ, producer, MC. Just having all those talents kind of blend in on this album. I think he's really showcasing a lot of his musical muscles on it, and it's just a good fresh breath of air as it relates to, you know, what's happening in hip hop and what's happening social politically. It has, you know, a great conscious message to it. It's just something refreshing, man, for us older heads that you know, kind of live in the golden era of hip hop. This is just like a good way to blend what's happening now with just some good soulful music. So.
It feels like the younger heads are actually embracing it too, which is good. Usually it doesn't happen that way. I mean, I feel old. I mean, this is definitely me and my daughter are in, she's 20. So we're like, we're in sync on this record. And that feels good. It's also good to see, you know, Kendrick and Jack White and Busta and Kanye and Kweli and Elton John is like tinkling in the keys, like, you know, singing the hook. It's a good, really, really good record. I haven't stopped listening to it. Probably won't stop listening to it for a while. I'm very, very happy about it.
Yeah.
Anyway, since we spoke last, how have you adjusted to the idea of President-elect Trump? Are you still kind of, where are you in the stages of everything? Are you in acceptance yet? Are you still?
I mean, I think I was early in to the point of acceptance. I mean, I still had the emotional draft of it all, but, you know, I mean, it is what it is. I think it's just an educational moment for us. I think it's going to create a climate of protest, and protest, you know, requires education. I think all those are positives.
Right.
You know, out of misery, you know, out of sadness, there's something to be, you know, gained out of those things. And so that's what I see. And I feel like he's going to get in his own way, and you know, truth always emerges. You know, truth always comes to the light. So I think it's going to have dire ramifications for a lot of sectors of this country and world, but I think also it's going to birth new movement, new mentality, and new moments. So I think that I still have, you know, I think I'm being more politicized by going through the process and wanting to explore and learn more about what's happening and just do more due diligence and research. And I think that's good for me personally.
Yep.
And I would, you know, challenge that for others to do. What about you? Emotionally, you know, where you at intellectually with it?
I'm still all over the place with it because it's just because I am late. You know, I wasn't as enlightened as you to really dive into the actual acceptance. You were kind of early on the like, this is good. This is the bright side of this is that, you know, the arc of you know, whatever, the arc of justice bends towards truth or whatever you want to say, like this will, you know, the truth will come out and we will change and out of this will come better things. And I believe that. I just couldn't wrap my head around it. So I'm having a hard time when things like, you know, Rance Previn gets, you know, chief of staff, which doesn't really affect us, but Steve Bannon is in the White House, which does kind of affect us, and, you know, neo-Nazis are like, wow, even we're surprised. Well, congratulations, Trump, good pick. Like, you know, it's just more of a reminder, like, oh, yeah, every time I think, like, well, you know, Trump, he, you know, then something else happens. So, all in all, though, I agree with you wholeheartedly that as long as nothing fatal happens, like nuclear war or war, I think that we will survive this. I think that we will, you know, because he will get in his own way, and he will, you know, I do believe that he's on the wrong side of history and the wrong side of sort of like the way things should be governed. So, you know,
I don't think it's even a question of us surviving. I mean, we lived through slavery in this country. I think more of it's a question. Or it's a challenge for us to rise to the occasion, to be stronger as a people, as a country.
Yeah.
And that's what I foresee, you know. Also, you know, when you think of movements of protest, aligned with movements of protest are, you know, creatives, artists, and a flourishing of, or a renaissance of new art forms and just more expressive art that, you know, it has a social conscious, you know, foundation. That's what I look forward to participating in,
yeah,
and also seeing. And so I think that is the beauty of it, because you're going to see so much come from it, you know?
So. Right. Yeah. I mean, you know, from so much negativity and ugliness will come, you know, beauty and positivity. So I agree. I want to talk about one of the things we want to talk about. We kind of touched on it last week, but, you know, Facebook is coming under a lot of criticism in terms of, you know, what is their role, you know, what their role was in this in terms of where people got their news and how people share their news. But then the question is, like, you know, what is Facebook's role, and how do they view journalism? And, you know, if they are this media company, or are they just a social company? You know, one of the things that Zuckerberg and Facebook says is, you know, we would much rather be the stadium than the referees, you know, but, you know, given that, you know, Facebook was a major, part of the way this election swung, and so much information was false and perpetuated through Facebook. What is the responsibility, if anything?
I mean, I don't think Facebook has a responsibility. They're a platform where a platform that is gives people the power to generate their own content and to share it and to explore and to learn or be misinformed. And I don't think they have a responsibility. I think, you know, if you look at, you know, traditional media, there's a lot of misinformation, a lot of programming, and a lot of just, a lot of information that's not necessarily fact-checked or rooted in anything that is factual. So, I mean, I feel like as a platform that is set up for the purpose of conversation, it's up for that user, it's up for that participant to do. It's up, they're responsible for fact checking and getting information and double checking it to see if it's correct or if it's, you know, lies or if it's misinformation. I don't think it's the responsibility of Facebook to do that. And even, you know, Facebook executives, Mark Zuckerberg, makes the argument that, you know, they have 1 billion plus users, and they have, you know, the great potential to, you know, sway opinion. But if you look at just the type of things that were being promoted or being shared through Facebook, it's only like 2% within the last few months that had anything to do with the election. So most of the content that people are engaged in,
right,
has nothing to do with anything that's partisan or anything that is political, really.
Right.
And so, I mean, I think that their responsibility is to allow people to have the freedom to, you know, push out whatever they want. And it's up for the user to be able to distinguish what is real and what is not.
Right.
What about you? What's your take on that?
I guess it depends on what we've been talking about as in terms of how Facebook and Twitter are trying to position themselves. We talked about them, especially Twitter, trying to position itself as a media company, if you will, and really, you know, getting to a place where they can, you know, not just be the stadium, but also be the broadcaster as well, you know, the broadcaster to the stadium. So I feel like that they're, as we sit right now, I don't think anything's wrong, but I think that moving forward, I think there's an opportunity for Facebook and Twitter to go the BuzzFeed route and sort of say, we have a separate division. This is now Facebook News, and we're gonna use all of our resources and money to give you the truth. Here's the truth on both sides, a la Vice or whatever
but
else.
Why do we need to do that?
Well, they don't need to do that.
Okay. That's the point.
But I think that this is what I think as a response to this, because Zuckerberg's really good at responding to things in a way. I think as a response to this, this would be a good response if Facebook wanted to continue to move forward towards we are. But, you know, Facebook's talking about doing original programming, you know, talking about doing all kinds of things and becoming more of a media company. If the way to kill all this criticism with Facebook is for Facebook to have a legitimate news division. I think that'd be smart for them to have a legitimate news division and then be able to figure out a way to bring news to the people in a different and new way. That would be the smartest thing they could do and still have all the noise and all the people sharing all the crap they want, but also have the facts over on one side. Now, do they have to do that? No. Is it a responsibility? I don't know.
I don't think they have to. I don't think it's a responsibility. I think the way that Facebook is set up with the algorithms that it uses, that most of what you see is what your friends are promoting. So if you are, you know, in a particular niche or community that has an affinity to a particular set of values or topics, you might see most of that.
Right.
Will the rest of the users on Facebook see that in equality? No. And so I like the fact that it is a bit of a degree of exploration and a degree of shareability amongst your own community. Whether or not it's truthful, whether or not it's in alignment to my personal values, most likely no. But I don't have a problem with it because I feel like the way they're set up now, where they're able to streamline different news organizations, like, I think that's the perfect way. And I think that's how they've been able to scale and become such a dominant force as it relates to all different types of media. Like, all the news organizations, traditional media, the Fourth Estate, they go to Facebook.
Yeah.
You know? So, like, why do they need to have their own news division?
Yeah,
For what?
Right. I mean,
and they make money off them doing that.
You're right.
So how are they going to make money off having their own news, their news squad? You know
right.
what I'm saying?
No, you're right. Like, if we were sitting on the board of Facebook and you and I were both presenting to Zuckerberg, he'd kick me out the room and he'd be like, you're right, Shine. You know, another raise for you. Breswell, you're fired. But you're right. Because you're 100% right. I'm purely talking out of public perception, PR, and maybe for the good of the world and country standpoint. And even then, who knows? Like, I think that Facebook has a responsibility as they grow to be the largest thing ever that people are doing or sharing or being a part of. They with that comes a certain responsibility. Just like they are building a fleet of drones to give, you know, fucking internet to areas that don't have internet, maybe you should figure out a way to get some news to the people so that we don't have the fucking fascists running our country.
But they are giving news to the people.
Yeah, okay.
They are.
All right.
I didn't see any of those memes that the alt-right movement was promoting on my timeline. I didn't see any of that.
Yeah, you're right. I mean,
I'm not a part of that community.
You're right. So. I can't argue with any of that whatsoever. I do want to, like, to the tributes. Now, like, you know, President Obama still has another 2 solid months in office. And it's a weird thing that's happening now because people have gone, now people are, like, really, on both sides, you're like, oh, shit, we kind of had it good with Obama. Obama was kind of good.
Like,
wait a minute. Whoa. Like, oh, well, he's going. So now you're seeing, like, an unprecedented amount of, and maybe this is relative to where our social media is, but you're seeing an unprecedented amount of, like, sort of tributes and social media tributes and hashtags and thank you, Obama, and Obama's the best, and all these others. And then, you know, BET had that celebration, the Love and Happiness and Obama celebration. There's more and more planned. I think this is great, but what do you think of this?
I mean, I definitely think that, you know, POTUS and FLOTUS, they're the best examples of dignity and respectability that I've seen in my lifetime, and arguably in the history of people sitting in those positions. I think they've done it very gracefully in terms of applauding, you know, Obama, the first black president. I think as a people, that's something that we should do. Obviously, BET was one of the first people, first organizations, first companies to do that.
And props to BET for doing so and for putting that special on. I mean, I'm always super hypercritical of BET, but very good job on that.
Right. But I think that, you know, Obama has had his fair share of criticism from without the black community and within the black community. Sure. A lot of people argue he really didn't do too much for us as a people. But I think, you know, what he's done for us as a symbol, what his family has done for us as a symbol, and just a face, I think it's great to see. It's great to have that type of connection visually. But in terms of like policy making and changing, I think that, you know, 8 years, we really haven't seen much. But I applaud him, you know, personally. And especially when you juxtapose it to Trump or you juxtapose it to anybody, really. Like, it's, I mean, like, how could you not applaud him? You know what I'm saying? So,
what do you think? Well, I'll tell you what I think. I think that President Obama is in a position to do a lot more for black folks
and poor
people post election. I think that you'll see him. I think you'll see him going to Overdrive. I mean, it's all everyone who knows him, David Plouffe and Axelrod and all people who know him say like that's his focus, aside from maybe owning a basketball team. But like his focus is to go into Overdrive, into back into public service, public life. He'll write a book, he'll do some other things. But whereas Clinton, you know, had the CGI, Clinton Global Initiative, and he's got the Clinton Foundation. He's Clinton's like, I'm going global, and I'm going, you know, with Bill Gates and AIDS and famine. I think that if Obama takes all of that power and focuses it inwards towards, you know, incarceration, you know, prison, you know, the prison industrial complex, poverty, what's happening with black folks in writ large, I think that could be huge. That could really, you know, dude's only 55 or whatever he is.
Yeah, he's young, and theoretically you're right, but
you're struggling a lot. As
the commander in chief, you know, we would as the most powerful, being the most powerful position in the world, you would expect him to do that already. So we said the same thing when we elected him, like he's gonna do great things. Everything you're saying now, we said to elect him. So I mean, it's to be seen. And I think there's probably less obstacles and things that will prevent him from being able to execute things that directly affect us as a people. However, that doesn't divorce the criticism. You know what I'm saying? That's what I'm saying. It doesn't divorce the criticism.
I hear you. I'm not as critical as Obama so much as I am about a realist about who Obama always was and who he is and what his expectations should and shouldn't be. But I'm also realistic about what he was able to do that last 6 years. The first 2 years, he was the only time he had the power to do something, and he had the financial crisis, and he's bailing out, you know, the Ford, and he's basically saving the world economy. Then the next 6 years, Republicans are blocking everything. All he could do is get through his ACA, Affordable Health Care Act, which he barely got through. The next 6 years are block. So I'm not saying he couldn't have, you know, I don't know what he tried to do, what didn't try to do, but I do know that it was very, it's not easy. So
I'm not saying that it's easy. I'm just saying that, you know, we elected President Obama because we thought that he would be more of a voice for us as African American community. Fact. That did not happen for two terms. So,
fact.
Yeah, and I'm not going to excuse any of that because of Republicans or obstructionists or whatever. Like, he did more for other groups and communities than he's done more for black people. In fact, statistically, black people have been on the decline since he's been in office. So if you look at the facts, employment rate for ourselves, our education, prison industrial complex, all these numbers are moving up and down. Right. Like, so I'm not going to excuse it, but I still applaud him. I still applaud him because I know that what he represents to us and what he represents to the world, and that's why I think them as a family, it's graceful, it's elegant, and to have a family of color to do it at such a great level is awesome.
Pointed criticism from Achilles Shine, but also very true. I would like to believe that we'll see what he does. He's, you know, his coming out, because every president and first lady has their thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Jimmy Carter has his legacy, which was the home building and helping the poor and doing that stuff. It's fantastic. I'm not sure what Reagan's legacy was. I still don't know what George W.'s legacy is. We know what Clinton's legacy is. So we'll see. We'll see what Obama, what he's got, what he's doing. What is George W. Bush doing? What is his post?
He's on a
presidency ranch. Legacy, like where's the George W. Bush Foundation? I mean, is he just like quietly? He's just trying to like don't talk about Iraq, don't talk about WMDs. Is that his whole thing? Is he just gonna fade into the sunset?
I think he's on his ranch fading to the sunset.
Wow.
Anywho.
All right, next. I'm sorry. I just thought about that. I'm like, man, Jordan, he hadn't really done nothing. He hadn't heard from old W. All right, so smartphones and the trade war. I mean, this is something that's come up. Like China's, you know, this whole idea that Trump is going to out China with in terms of industrial moving forward industrially, moving jobs back from China to here. Doing all these things to make us compete with China. We can really never really compete with China based on the labor, you know, and the amount of people. But one of the main reasons is they make all of our smartphones, you know. And so our smartphones are the cornerstone of our entire, you know, our economic and social. And smartphones are the corner of everything we do socially and economically. And functioning in this country, and the fact that China is responsible for all of our smartphones, that's kind of checkmate, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, on the campaign trail, you know, Trump is saying all this stuff, you know, all these grand things that he's going to do to make America great again, and one of them is obviously the trade policies. And I mean, it's like, okay, when you just look at it in terms of what is the number one company in America and in the world. Like, it's Apple, you know, they hold the record, and they're even arguing that this year Alphabet will hold the record for, I believe, $17 billion made in one quarter. So just in terms of the amount of wealth that, you know, this American company is able to generate, and yes, they outsource the manufacturing of their product in China. The only thing they don't manufacture internationally is the MacBook Pro, which you have right there. They do that still here, and hence why it's so expensive. So, I mean, yes. I think that, yeah, like... That's
a good point.
Like China, I mean, I've been to China twice, and they're able to make anything. They're able to you have knockoffs of everything. So theoretically, China can make a better phone than, say, Apple. If they really wanted to, you know, invest money into their own tech company, I believe they could. And I mean, in terms of the dependency on American goods, I think that China wants to expand. We talk about all the time, and they're bringing movies over and all that sorts of things. But China also wants other products that America has. So I think it would be bad news for both countries if they were to have more laws in place that kind of strip away from the relationship that is now. And so when you hear Trump saying all these things, it's like, what are you talking about? Like all these intricate things that are part of the relationship you haven't even assessed, but you're making this loud statement just to rally people up.
Yeah, well, and more importantly, the people who, I mean, I don't know, people voting in the office also don't know. You know, he's saying the loud statements to rile people up, and the fact is, if people knew their facts, it wouldn't rile them up. So right. I'm like, hey, that's not true.
Right.
That's not possible, Mr. Trump. But instead, they're like, yeah, do it. So, you know, well, you know.
Yeah, you bring those Apple jobs back home, and your iPhone might cost $2,000, you know, versus $800.
Well, I'm not paying $2,000 for an iPhone.
You're paying $800 for one already. What's the extra $1,000?
Make America great again. All right.
Yeah, exactly.
Back to Twitter, it's really quick about Twitter. Twitter is, you know, bolstering up their live sports and their sports stuff and trying to and doing some shows and doing some other stuff. They have Amex, American Express, JBL Harmon. They have a live original sports show, which is great, except for it just looks super, super white.
Yeah,
but, you nice. Know, I mean, look at these guys.
I've seen it.
The sports guys! Hey. Like, you know, flannel shirts and beards and no people of color at all. But, okay. You know, the starters. I don't know any... I'm doing a comedy routine right now. I don't know any starter of any team that has four white dudes on it. But anyway. Okay.
I mean, I think it's cool, man. I mean, Twitter is already innovating in that space as it relates to NFL and Thursday night streaming. And I think to have now the NBA as a partner and to be able to bring in, you know, large Fortune 500 brands to help, you know, support that, like an American Express, I think is dope. And to be able to have the type of the banter that we see on ESPN or Fox Sports now, to be able to have it on our smartphones and not have the dependency of a cable subscription I think it's cool to be able to, you know, maybe have LeBron come on the starters and in off season and talk about basketball, or have, you know, a retired player like Kobe or whoever come on and talk about basketball. I think that's dope to be able to have that built into the Twitter app and to be able to tweet and have all that functionality.
That team needs LeBron to get some rebounds.
And I think that Twitter has to do this to survive, like in terms of them creating more opportunities for monetization, like especially when you compare them with the other big four, they have to be able to, you know, create a better avenue for shareability and just content. And so I think this is a great step for them. And using live events, using sports is the perfect way to do it.
Right.
And so you're against it. You don't seem too happy about it.
I just don't like. I'm just really anti, I don't know, I'm going to get in trouble. Well, I guess I can't get too much trouble on Black Hollywood Live, but I just, you know, do we really need a show with four more white guys telling me about, like, I know we're in Trump nation right now, but, I mean, it's just, you know, youth is one thing, like, attitude's another, point of view's another, like, you know, not, okay, no women, like, whatever, but, like, I mean, these guys are like,
hey, I'm with you on this.
That's not even like a Puerto Rican dude.
I'm with you on this.
They got one dude with dark hair, like Joey Fatone looking dude with a top knot. Hey. Like, that's the best they could do?
Hey.
That's just shameful to me. And for me, when I'm marketing stuff, like, there's only so much of, like, the starter, those guys that I can see and not just get angry about it.
Yeah. I am an advocate of this in concept, but in execution, how it's being displayed and marketed, like, it's terrible. Like, NBA is what, 95% black, and we don't have any type of person of color to represent the conversation around basketball.
And
that's stupid.
And in all fairness,
that's a fail.
And in all fairness, I do. I haven't seen the show. I haven't seen a promo for the show. I've only seen this promo still. And I hate it.
It's terrible.
All four of these guys, I hate them already.
So let's hope that this is just the the beta.
Yeah, and that being said, look, I'm a huge fan of Bill Simmons and The Ringer and his whole ecosystem. And you know, The Ringer. I mean, actually, The Ringer. He's made painstaking efforts to hire a lot of people of color.
Bill, as he did with Grantland.
Right. I mean, not initially, but he ultimately corrected it, and then he got Wesley in there, and also Jalen in there. So mm-hmm. you know, and Rim Brown. Yeah. So, but like, I don't know, man. Shit. Next, all right.
Yeah, whatever. I don't think that I'll be watching it. I mean, I'll check it out.
I need to see it. Yeah. Like, now I talk so much shit about it. I need to actually check it out.
So we can give a fair judgment.
So, to the starters, I reserve judgment until I check out the show. But I don't like the promo still. It's already killing me. All right. So Google, I don't know, man. Here comes Google. Google's redesigned Gmail for the iPhone and their Google phone. It's like faster and like cooler and it's more intuitive. And I've actually tried it out. Well,
good night.
You're out.
I mean,
Gmail.
Go ahead, make your point, bro.
I don't know, man. They keep sneaking up on me.
I mean, so on your iPhone, you use an app for your mail? You don't use mail on your iPhone?
I use mail, but what?
Thank you. Okay, case closed. Like, what's the point?
Well, you know.
What's the point?
Okay.
Well, I don't understand. Like, what's the advantage of using Gmail as an app versus using mail?
What if I get into it's the Chrome argument? You know, people like Chrome on their iPhone as opposed to Safari.
That's different. They're both web browsers that do the same thing, essentially, generally.
This Gmail browser can do the same thing that your mail browser.
But don't you have other email clients?
Yeah, you can dump other email clients in here.
Oh, you can. So I could have your Yahoo account can go into there.
I don't know that for sure.
Right? All right, then. Thank you.
I think so.
Okay,
but I don't know that for sure.
In fact, that's one of the things that is of high critique about it, is that you can't even have multiple open accounts at the same time. You have to log out of one to log into one. That's right. Terrible. You should be able to have all your accounts open at the same time and be able to easily switch and navigate through, just like you can on Instagram. Like, if I want to go to a different profile on Instagram, click of a button, I'm on a different profile.
Here's the most terrifying thing to me, and this day is probably coming, and I hope it doesn't come. When will be the day when Google yanks all of his shit off Apple?
Hey, I don't think that'd be a good move for them. But hey, we could talk. We could talk about that later.
I would like, oh, you, that would, how's that Apple search working out for you, buddy? You like Apple Math House? Apple search. You find anything you need to find? Like, you can't, no Gmail. Nope, sorry, can't get Gmail on Apple Maps, but you can get everything over in Gmail. Like, that's going to be the power move.
Well, hey, you might be right, though. You might be right, being that they have their own phone, hardware, software, phone.
They're
now
setting up for that.
They are setting up for it.
So, but I don't know. Like, that's going to be the moment. Now, when I said, that's why I said I can't guarantee that I'll be an Apple guy forever. That's going to be the moment when Google's like, you can only get our shit over on the Google
shit. But it wouldn't be that exactly. Like, you could still search for Google on within any browser. Like,
can you?
Yes.
I don't know.
You can only search on Google through a particular browser. They don't own a browser.
That's true.
Or they have Chrome, but I mean,
they might block it. They may block it out.
I highly doubt that.
All right. Me too. But you never know. You never know. Okay. Cool. All right. Let's see what's next. I'm sorry. DraftKings. I forgot about our people at DraftKings. Man, fantasy football. Football season is midway through. Actually, it's a little more than midway through. You know, everyone. I doubt anyone's football season, if we're playing traditional fantasy football, is going good, given all the injuries and all the things that have happened this year, everything that's happened with players and football. I know mine's terrible, but if you're playing DraftKings, however, you're probably making money because you have the ability to be flexible and move stuff around and do basically anything you want. So, DraftKings is a way that we've been talking about every week. You can play football every single week. 1 week fantasy football. You don't have to worry about any of that injuries, any of that other stuff. You can do 50-50 contests. You can do all kinds of different things. You can win your share in $100,000 in total prizes every single week. To check it out, just go to DraftKings.com right now. Use our promo code GEEK. Play for free with your first deposit. That's promo code GEEK, as in Geek Nerd Tech. Play for free and share in over $100,000 in total prizes this weekend, only at DraftKings.com. DraftKings.com. Eligibility restrictions apply. See the site for details. All right. A couple more things before we get out of here really quickly. This is kind of a longer conversation, but I want to mention Elon Musk is talking about automation, you know, will lead to what we're calling a universal basic income. And mm-hmm. He sort of thinks that things will go to a universal basic income, which will help sort of the help balance things out mm-hmm. in the world, because food will be a certain thing, you know, transportation will be a certain place, all of our basic services will be in a certain place. So we all, to contribute to society, there's only a certain amount of money that we all need to make and operate. I think that's kind of what he's saying. I don't know, but what do you think of this idea?
I mean, it's not his idea. You know, when you look at, you know, futurists and science fiction authors, you know, they've been purporting this idea for decades. Right. And the technology and the way our society, our global society is constructed, is heading towards this point where, where are our traditional jobs or means of labor will shift because of automation. And because of that, people will be out of jobs. But also because of automation, we'll have a surplus of things. And so in that surplus of things, you'll be able to provide for the people. And in providing for the people, it gives them time for further exploration of creativity, and, right. and which will contribute theoretically to a greater society. And so they call it a protopian versus a utopia or a dystopian. It's a protopia where things are slowly moving forward because of technology.
Right.
And so I believe that this is definitely something that could happen because we are already seeing, you know, a lot of industries that were once staffed by, you know, working human hands that are now completely automated. And I mean, I don't see how we talk about AI, we talk about having an intelligent being that could be able to pretty much think for us and do things for us. We're not too far off from that. And so I like the idea of creating a different type of ism. It's not capitalism, but it's a different type of ism where we're able to have the freedom to be able to explore, I guess, our humanity in different ways and not worry about starving, or not worry about not having shelter, not worry about not having access to education, because now our machines are able to provide the basics for us. I think it's an incredible concept.
I think it's an incredible concept too. It feels a little like it's bullet training towards a more of a dystopian future than not, but like it is something out of a Brave New World or out of a 1984 George Orwell. But you know, I think that it could work. You know, it could definitely work. I get these quick hits really quickly because we don't have time to get into all of these stuff. But I went, you know, Netflix and Comcast is, or, you know, Comcast new system. Netflix will be there like a normal channel. That's kind of dope. We'll talk about that a little more next week. You know, Pandora is coming stronger in terms of their hiring of employees of color. It's up 45%. Good for Pandora. They want to get it to 45% by 2020. But the crazy new Nintendo entertainment system sold out. I actually tried to go get one, and I almost waited in line, and I didn't wait in line. I came in, it was already all gone. They're gone forever. They're gone past Christmas. Were you trying to get one? Did you care?
I definitely wanted one, and I think it's just a major fail for Nintendo not to have pre-sales. Why don't they have like a pre-sale program where people can sign up and be like, hey, I want one, and they already know what the pre-orders is going to be, and then you have some beyond that. Like, to be able to have such a high demand and not be able to have the supply, just stupid.
This isn't Nintendo's first rodeo. They release consoles all the time, games all the time. They're in this business. They do this all the time.
This is not Nintendo's first fail either as it relates to marketing and their rollout. That like they just don't have the, I don't know, they're not demonstrating that they have the capability to pair their creative IP in this new business landscape. They continue to fail with every launch, it seems like.
Wow. So I think there'll be another version of this too with more games or something you can plug in to get more games anyway, but we'll see. Price point's incredible, by the way.
It's like $65 or something.
Yeah. Mafia 3, which I've been kind of half interested in. Black protagonist, mixed race or black protagonist, they consider it a risk. It's actually paying off the sales and through the roof. The plot lines are through the roof. People are really loving this game. I want to talk a little further about this debate about the fact that, you know, is it a good thing or bad thing that the black protagonist as the black gangster in Mafia 3 is so popular? Or is it a bad thing that, you know, he's not a, you know, that he's basically not an astronaut, he's a gangster? You know
what I mean? I definitely have takes on that. We could probably explore that next week. But I mean, even Watch Dogs 2 has a black protagonist. So I think the point is that we're having more diversity in games. Yeah, maybe it's not the most positive character, but these type of games are never positive.
Yeah, exactly.
So I mean, to be able to have some, you know, representation and that fit the storyline, I think is a cool thing. But we could further explore that.
And last but not least, Voltron's is in or out. Voltron's Universal's doing a live action Voltron movie, in or out. That's your generation.
I'm saying 100% in.
Wow.
You already have Netflix doing it, animated series already.
Yeah, so. It's out and doing a thing. But so you're in on the live action?
I think it would be cool.
Okay. I think it would be kind of cool. I was never in on Voltron. Maybe I was too old for it. Giant cats. Arm. I don't know. I don't know how it's going to translate.
Kids will be kids, man.
Marissa, are you in on that one? All right.
They had success with Transformers.
Yes.
So I think Voltron will actually be a success.
Yes.
Kids will be kids.
Kids will be kids. All right. All right. That's all we got for today. We're going to get out of here on that one. Thank you very much. Where can the people find you?
You guys can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Keely Shine, AKILISHINE. Where can I find you?
On Instagram and Twitter at Joe K. Braz, well, Snapchat at JK Braz. Check out the new Tribe album. And that's all we got to say. See you next week.
From executives Kevin Undergaro, Dario Kristen, Tiana Hobson, and the entire BHL staff, we would like to thank you for supporting Black Hollywood Live, the first online broadcast network dedicated to African-American entertainment. For questions and comments, contact us. info@blackhollywoodlive.com. Like us on Facebook, tweet us, or Instagram us at BHL Online. And I am the official voice of Black Hollywood Live, Scipio. Instagram me at KingXOBay. Thanks for tuning in. The views expressed here are those of the host only and do not necessarily reflect the views of BHL or its owners or principals.